Hello, and welcome to the Women Going Beyond Wealth podcast. I am Kelly Manning, financial advisor at Beyond Wealth Advisors. This women-focused podcast is to help women live joyfully by understanding and acknowledging their own wealth. As we talked last week, the definition of wealth is all-encompassing. Yet today, we are focusing specifically on monetary wealth, and I am so excited about this conversation. We are in for a treat because Liz Flint will be joining us to discuss all things finance. Liz is the Senior Business Development Strategist at the investment firm MFS. Hello, Liz. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm really excited to be here today.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you. Before we get started, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Give me some of your highlights.
Of course. So I was born and raised in Arizona. I went to school at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. I have worked with MFS now for almost 22 years. So one of the things that I do in my role is myself and my team, we have the opportunity to speak to financial advisors about what sorts of things are they doing to grow, adapt, and have success, but also what are some of the issues that they are facing and their clients are facing where we might be able to put together content that we can then deliver to clients like we're doing today. So thank you so much. On a personal note, like I said, born and raised in Arizona, that's where I currently live with my family. I have two boys, almost teenagers right now. A number of years ago, I did go through a divorce. So I am divorced. I am raising two young men. I work full time. And I will tell you that some of my challenges today, they're totally different than they were a few years ago. And my concerns for the future look a lot different as well. So I really think that the conversation today, that's why it's so important, is because I know there's a lot of things that women go through that we need to be thinking about, that we need to be planning for. So thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you for joining us. And you're absolutely right. Women wear multiple hats and at different seasons during their lives. But there's never just one hat. There are multiple hats. So this is a perfect conversation for us to have today. So what I would like to do is kind of start asking you just some questions and have a nice conversation about all things finance. We're going to start with women and investing. Can you talk about the rise of the single American woman and the importance of understanding your financial future?
Of course. So right now, for the first time ever, single American women are outnumbering married women. And there are a number of different reasons for that. The first is the baby boomer generation. So if you were to take a look at the baby boomer generation, the divorce rate in the baby boomer generation, it has absolutely skyrocketed. But another thing when you think about the baby boomer generation is the fact that many baby boomers are becoming empty nesters for the first time, which is a really great thing. Your kids, they're growing up. They're moving out, they're figuring out life. Like, it's a really, really exciting time for them, except what we're finding is that so many people are remaining unhappily married for the sake of their children. So when you think about those sorts of things, that's one of the reasons. But the second reason that we see is the average age of a woman getting married has just gone up. So if we were to take a look at the 1950s, the average age of a woman getting married was less than 21 years old. Today, that number is, last time I checked, it was over 28. So the age of a woman getting married has just gone up. Now, whether that is they're focusing on their career, whether they are focusing on education, whether it is, you know what, I'm good and I haven't found my soulmate, my Prince Charming, my plus one, many women are not getting married. And in fact, over 90% of all women are going to be solely responsible for their finances at some point in their life. So that's why it's really important to understand your finances and then also think about your financial future.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. Women have challenges with investing and being in and out of the workforce, and we live longer. So from a longevity standpoint, what do you see in terms of healthcare for women who are living longer?
Yeah, so typically, you're exactly right. Women typically are living longer. Typically, it's about 5 to 7 years women live longer than men. But if you take a look at people in their 80s, for every one man, there are two women. And for people in their 90s, for every one man, there are three women. So when you think about that, what we've done is we've actually done some research and we've found that women are spending more on healthcare expenses, but not because women are consuming any more in healthcare than a man, but because women live longer. So what we found is that most women potentially are going to spend around $134,000 more in healthcare expenses during the last 4 years of her life, where if you take a look at those statistics, that is when she is going to be all alone. So when you do think about women living longer and you think about these healthcare expenses, these are the types of things that you want to be thinking about, that you want to be planning for, that you want to be talking to a professional financial advisor about, such as yourself, Kelly.
Excellent. Thank you. And it's that $134,000 in the last 4 years of life is astounding.
Yeah. And it doesn't include, and one of the things that I should have said was that it doesn't include long-term care, which we think about and is something that many people might need.
Well, isn't that the truth? Well,
yeah.
Let's continue this conversation from an investment perspective. So women are typically out of the workforce longer than men for child rearing, caregiving, and we live longer, so we have to save more, but yet because we're out of the workforce on longer time, that makes it a little challenging. Any recommendations to help catch up?
Yeah, so typically women, there's a number of statistics when it comes to this, whether it's, women on average take up to 3 times out of the workforce to be a caregiver, whether that's caring for a spouse, an aging loved one, or a child. But the other thing is that when you think about that, when you think about taking time out of the workforce and sidestepping your career, there's a number of things where you might not be getting your employer, your employer matched to your 401k, or you might not be contributing to that 401k plan. So what I think the most important thing to remember is that if you do stop working, I know that caregiving is an amazing responsibility that we all have, and by no means am I suggesting that you work or that you don't work, as everybody's situation is unique. But if you do stop working, make sure that your money doesn't stop working for you, because there's a number of different things that you might be able to take advantage of where that money continues to work in your favor. So for that, my recommendation would just be to kind of talk to a professional about it and find out what are some of those options that you might be able to take advantage of if you do stop working, if you are out of the workforce.
Excellent. And the other thing is, especially with single women waiting to get married, that's work years that a lot of 20-year-olds, as much as I hate to say it, are like, oh, retirement's far down the line. I don't need to worry about saving for retirement now. But yet those are great working years where they're making good money, but they're not investing it. So one of the recommendations that I would have for those women is put them as much away as you possibly can prior to even getting married or having children.
No, I absolutely agree. One of the things that comes up a lot, or one of the biggest questions that I get, or the most common asked questions that I get, is what is one of the biggest financial mistakes that you see people make? And I always tell people that don't put off until tomorrow what you can be doing today. Make sure that you are paying yourself first. So I'm sure we've all heard of the concept of the power of compounding. Well, I like to think that this is very similar to that of a snowball, because if you can visualize a snowball, it typically starts out very small. But then when you roll it over and over and over, that snowball just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, it's like that with investing. So if you start out with a small investment and you continue to put money away, whether it is $5 or $10, $25 or $50, that investment just gets bigger and bigger and bigger over time. So that is the power of compounding, and that is why it's going to be so important to continue to pay yourself first, because if you can get into that habit early, it's only going to help you establish some of those really strong habits as you continue to get older.
Couldn't have said it better. My next question is regarding Social Security, because so many women will rely on Social Security income as part of their retirement income. For those that are going to take Social Security, can you touch upon the importance of getting a second opinion?
Yes, absolutely. So when you think about Social Security, I think that it is absolutely going to be imperative to get a second opinion, and here's why. Because 82% of women would have been entitled to a higher monthly benefit if they would have only known their options. Meaning, we see a lot of women that are either going into that Social Security Administration office, or they're calling that Social Security Administration office, and that individual that is helping them just doesn't know enough about their own specific situation to make sure that they are declaring the best strategy. And there are so many different strategies that can be taken. And once you declare a strategy, it's going to be really hard to change it. So if you or somebody that you know is going to be taking Social Security, I would just recommend getting a second opinion, just making sure that that strategy that you're taking is the best for you and your situation, because there's a number of different factors that go into it when you're figuring out what Social Security strategy will be best for you.
Okay. Excellent. And financial advisors, for the most part, play a nice role in that, because financial planning kind of brings up and includes Social Security in that planning for retirement. So, well, let's talk about credit. Can you tell us, you know, what makes up a credit score, and what are some of the things that can hurt your score? And finally, what things can be done to improve your score?
Yeah. So I think credit, I love talking about credit only because I got in a lot of trouble when I was in college with credit, because if you think about college campuses, there are a number of college campuses that offer credit cards to their students, and typically they entice them by offering them a t-shirt or a towel or whatever that is. So I know when I was in college at Arizona State, it was a t-shirt for me. So I ended up opening this credit card. I found out you could take cash advances out, and I didn't understand what made up the credit score. And so I didn't understand how that was going to impact me for so long and how that was going to follow me for so many years to come. So when you think about financial literacy, I think one of the most important things is really understanding credit, because it's something that when you have a credit card and you are responsible with it, it is a great asset to have. But with me, I wasn't, and I got in trouble, and it wasn't good. So when you think about what makes up a credit score, there's five different components that make up your score. 35% is your payment history. So really building a history of paying your bills on time, making those consistent, timely payments, because your past long-term behavior is used to forecast your future long-term behavior. 30% is your amount owed. So keeping your credit utilization rate below 30% of your credit limit. So keeping those balances low. So for example, you are given a $10,000 credit line. 30% of your credit score is making sure that you keep that balance under $3,000. So 30% is going to be the amount you owe. So if you think about having a balance on your card, making sure that it falls below that 30% of that credit line. 15% is that length of your credit history. So keeping your oldest card open, don't close a credit card, especially if you've had it a long time. So that card that I was telling you about that I opened when I was in college, I still have it. I don't use it all the time, but I try to use it maybe once or twice a month. Maybe I fill up my gas tank or I go to the grocery store. But 15% is the length of that credit history. 10% is new credit. So how often are you opening new credit cards? So when you think about this, there's two types of inquiries that are important to keep in mind. There is a hard inquiry and there is a soft inquiry. So a hard inquiry occurs when a lender or a credit card issuer looks at your credit to make a lending decision. So let's say you go to Target and you want to get the credit card. That is a hard inquiry because they are looking to see if they are going to lend you money. However, a soft inquiry occurs when a person or a company checks your credit as part of a background check. So for this one, think if you are going to get a job. You know, they do a background check when you apply for a job. That is a soft inquiry. So a hard inquiry will affect your credit score because they are taking a look to see if they can lend you money. A soft inquiry will not impact your credit score because, again, they aren't looking to see if they can lend you money. So that is going to be the difference between the two different inquiries, and that is 10% of that credit score. And then the last 10% is your credit mix, meaning can you be responsible with different types of credit, whether it's credit cards, whether it's mortgages, whether it's car loans, because they want to see if you can have multiple lines of credit and you are responsible. So if you take a look at those five different components, and what are some of the things that you can be doing to improve your score, or what are some of the things that you can be doing that might bring that score down? Well, 35% of that score, again, is made up of building or of paying those bills on time. So if you think about improving your score, making sure that you are having timely and consistent payments on your credit card. But also on the other side of it, things to bring that score down, if you're not paying those bills on time, or if you're opening too many lines of credit at one time, or if you are just opening those cards for that enticement. Those are some of the things that you can be doing to bring that score down.
Excellent. And I think probably the most important is pay your bills on time.
Yep, exactly.
Pay your bills.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Well, Liz, you and I are mom of boys. So let's move to kind of have a couple questions about kids and finances. So first question is there a way to talk to your kids about finances without talking to them about assets? Some ideas that can lay down that foundation just from an early age.
Absolutely. So I think one of the most important things that we can be doing with our kids and finances is talking to them and educating them. And I think there is a way that you can do that from an early age. So there are a number of different resources out there. The one that I really like that I think does a really good job, it's called moneysavvy.com. Moneysavvy.com. Now, what this website does is it actually allows you to start to have these conversations with kids from kids of early ages. So for example, there is a piggy bank on there for kids that are 4 or 5. And this piggy bank, what it is it's broken into sections. So save, spend, donate, invest. So from a very early age, children are learning that there are different buckets of money. Now, as kids get older, the official guide to money for teenagers. So what this book does is it actually has some really good tools in it to talk to teenagers about money using vocabulary and using language that teenagers can understand. As they go off to college, the Off to College Budgeting Workbook that is teaching and educating college-age children about the importance of budgeting and what does that look like and how do you budget. And then once they graduate and they get that first job, there's a book on there that talks about first job, first paycheck. because there's different things that you need to think about when you do get that first paycheck. And what do those taxes look like? And what does that mean? So moneysavvy.com is a great place to start, no matter how old your children are. But I do think that when you think about children, I think the important thing is that we can have these conversations no matter how old they are. And the earlier that we start to talk to them and the earlier that we start to educate them, that will just set up a really successful future for them when it comes to finances and budgeting and building that strong financial literacy that is going to be so important for them.
Well, don't you find it interesting that, when we were younger, and probably earlier than that, parents didn't talk about money with their kids. And so, you fast forward and we make all of those mistakes. And sometimes those experiences are the best teachers, but we can at least try to have that communication with our kids so they don't make the same mistakes we made.
No, I think you're right. I look back at when I was growing up and both my parents worked. My mom was a teacher. My dad owned his own men's clothing store. And it was just something that we just never talked about in our family. We just didn't talk about, we didn't talk about money. We didn't talk about a lot of that. And then I also think about my days in high school and college. I was never given a financial literacy class. I never, had to take a financial literacy class. So all of a sudden I graduate from college and I really have no idea what I'm doing. And I don't think it's, I don't think it's anybody's fault or anything. It was just something that we just didn't talk about at that time. So I think if we can start to have these discussions, I think if we can start to ask these questions when maybe we don't know something, or I think if we can start to talk to our children about it, just to give them some of this foundation that will help them, I think that's going to be really important.
Well, I agree. Let's move on to the other hat women wear, and that is being a caregiver to aging loved ones. So in terms of that care, do you have any suggestions or ideas on being prepared for an emergency?
Absolutely. So yeah, I think so many of us are going to be caregivers at some point in our lives. And I think Rosalind Carter, she said it first and she said it best when she said there's four types of people in this world. There's people who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, or those who will need care themselves. So whether that is caring for an aging loved one, whether that's caring for a spouse, whether that is caring for a child, so many of us are going to be asked to do that. So I think one of the best things that you can be doing to be prepared for an emergency is having a healthcare directive on those you love. Because HIPAA law states that if somebody over the age of 18 is taken to a hospital or an emergency room or a healthcare facility, that facility is not able to release information until there is a healthcare directive in place. So the importance of having one is going to be incredibly important. So not just with your aging loved ones or not just with your spouse, but also think about your family members that are over the age of 18. So when you think about young adults that are 18, they're typically going off to college for the first time. Maybe they're on their own for the first time. So I know when I was 18, I went off to school. I was at Arizona State University. And I made some questionable decisions, nothing that landed me in the hospital, but what happened if it did? And what happened if all of a sudden my mom and dad drove up to Tempe to be told that they weren't able to get any information on me because there wasn't a healthcare directive in place? So anybody in your life that's over the age of 18, it's going to be important to have that healthcare directive on them. So there's a number of different apps out there. The one that I really like is called Evernote. It's called Evernote. And what this app allows you to do is it just allows you to keep that healthcare directive right on your phone. But not only does it allow you to keep that healthcare directive, it also allows you to put any other type of pertinent medical information. Is this individual taking any medications or do they have any allergies or is there any kind of information that you might need to know if you were to be making a decision on their behalf. But the reason that I like it on your phone is because we all know we carry our phones with us all the time. So if you were to get that call and you are having to make these decisions, you don't have to drive to your home to get that healthcare directive. You don't have to drive to your loved one's house to get it. It's on you. It's on your phone. You can make the best and most informed medical decisions during that time. So again, that app is called Evernote, but I really think that the idea here is just to make sure that you do have that healthcare directive on those individuals over the age of 18.
Well, I'll tell you, my son turned 18 a couple of months ago, and on his birthday, he signed his healthcare directive. Yeah. And I think that that's one area we're all used to the HIPAA documents that our doctors and the hospitals require us. And so it gives authority to some people. That does not negate the need of a healthcare directive for those individuals, but we forget about our kids. So like, especially those kids, those single adults, their parents need to have that healthcare directive for your exact reason. You go off to school, you drive down because your child is, you know, has an emergency and you don't get any information. So thank you for that reminder. One other question in regards to being a caregiver is, can you talk about some things that you see from a caregiver standpoint or things that we should think about?
Yeah, I think when you think about caregiving, I think that as we talked about, so many of us are going to be caregivers in the future, whether we're caregivers right now. But I also think that caregiving is very expensive and it continues to go up in price. Mm-hmm. And if you take a look at a private room or a semi-private room at a nursing home, I think the average is over $7,700 a month, and a private room is over $8,800 a month. So it's expensive. Caregiving is expensive. Nursing homes are expensive. Insurance is expensive. So I think when you think about caregiving, one of the most important things that you can be doing is just planning and talking to a professional such as yourself, Kelly, to talk about, okay, what are some of the options that are available to me? Or this might be something that I have to think about in my future, because I think it's always better to plan for these things than to, you know, to have them happen and you're not prepared for it. So I think when you think about caregiving, planning for an event is just going to be something that will be very, very helpful to you.
Well, it's a roadmap, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Few of us take a vacation without a roadmap of how we're going to get to our destination, yet planning for our future, and that truly does include caregiving for our loved ones, has to be a part of it.
No, absolutely. And I think when we do think about what are some of the things that we can be doing to plan and what are some of the things that we can be doing to talk to our family and our loved ones, there's a really great resource out there, and it's called the Family Love Letter. And that's exactly where you'll go to find it, familyloveletter.com. So when you talk about a roadmap, what this is, what the Family Love Letter is it is a 35-page workbook. So essentially, it is a roadmap that you are giving to your family, where you're talking to them about your wishes, or you are talking to them about your wealth. So what this book allows you to do is it allows you to write everything down. So you can write down, yes, the contact information for your accountant or your attorney or your wealth advisor. But what it also does is it actually lists all of the 30 most important documents that any of us have. And then next to each of those, there's a line item, which allows you to tell your loved ones, okay, where do you go to find this document? When was this document created? Why was this document created? Because for anybody who's ever had to settle an estate, you know that it is a marathon of activity, of documents to collect and paperwork to find and information to gather. And unfortunately, you are being asked to do it during a time of crisis. So what this Family Love Letter does is it not only allows you to write everything down, it allows you to start having these conversations with your family members. And essentially, it is allowing you to create that roadmap that will help you prepare for the future.
Well, I love that. Familyloveletter.com, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Awesome. Well, Liz, this has just been delightful. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to chat with me today. Any final thoughts?
Oh, well, thank you first and foremost for having me. I think when I think final thoughts, I think the most important thing that we can do is just educate ourselves. I think that it's totally fine to ask questions, that there's all going to be things that come up during our lives that we have questions about, and maybe we don't know the answers to. So I think it's educating ourselves, but then also working with a professional to talk about some of these things, to plan for some of these things, to kind of, like you said, Kelly, create that roadmap so that you are setting yourself up for financial success down the road.
Well, I, again, couldn't agree more. And, you know, as women, oftentimes, because we wear so many hats, because we are so busy, education for ourselves often gets put down at the very bottom of a long list. And to live intentionally, to try to improve your own situation, education needs to be moved up higher onto that list. So, and you know, one last thought that I have is I recently read a quote by Richie Norton, and it hit me hard. Here it is, quote, "Intentional living is the art of making our own choices before others' choices make us," unquote. Think about that one for a second. Lack of decision-making is actually a decision, and it negates your voice and your intention. So, along with education, be intentional, take control, and live intentionally. So thank you so much for listening today. It is my hope that today's discussion gave you a nugget or two that will help you to make better financial choices, help you to be better educated, help you to make your future a priority. Thank you so much for being with us today. My name is Kelly Manning, financial advisor at Beyond Wealth Advisors. And if you enjoyed this Women Going Beyond Wealth podcast, please subscribe on Spotify and, more importantly, share with your friends. You can also find and follow me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Have a blessed and purposeful day.
Thank you for joining us. Have ideas to pass along for a future podcast? Write us at kelly.manning@beyondwealthadvisors.com. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA/SIPC Investment Advisory Services, are offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Beyond Wealth Advisors Incorporated is located at 600 Southwest Jefferson, Suite 208 in Lee Summit, Missouri. Phone number 816-246-8450. Beyond Wealth Advisors Incorporated is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services. Any opinions are those of Beyond Wealth Advisors Incorporated and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. There is no assurance any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected.